just welcome everyone to tonight's CCL training program. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics relating to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's specific topic is one that we've all been waiting for, processing the election. We're going to join CCL's Strategy Director, Tony Cerna, for a discussion about the implications for CCL's work ahead based on what we know of the election outcome as of the time of this training tonight. And I'll also highlight that for more information on CCL's perspective heading into the election, I'll put a link in the chat where you can also see a wonderful blog piece that Tony drafted up ahead of this training tonight that really explores three different scenarios, one of which, as you can imagine, we'll probably be exploring a little bit more thoroughly tonight. I'll also highlight really quick with some housekeeping that we are recording this training. So Tony Cerna drives organization-wide strategic thinking for CCL and supports our long-range planning, helping to clarify organizational priorities and maximize our effectiveness at achieving them. This is kind of a critical week for having somebody like Tony around. So we're so glad to have him on tonight. Yeah. Tony also helps coordinate immediate efforts to achieve strategic goals, promoting synergies across CCL's departments, and really helping provide that vision for our strategic goals. And for tonight's training, we've got three simple things that you're going to walk away with really having the chance to highlight with our time together. We're going to process what's known of the current results. We're going to talk about how that frames our strategy and the implications for CCL's focus looking into 2021. And we're also going to highlight and start speaking about what you can do and how you can do that now.
Thanks, Brett. But I'll start with our agenda. We're going to focus a little bit on just overall stuff. Then we're going to look at the presidential results, the congressional results, and CCL's overall strategy, and then what's next for you and your chapter. So first, I want to just look at what are some of the feelings that are going on for people. And those feelings are definitely what I would say is mixed feelings. There's probably lots of us are feeling mixed. And then between us, there's lots of different feelings. You know, some people, I mean, we're feeling a lot of uncertainty right now. The results are still not final. You know, there's a lot of unknown still, whether that's the Senate and the presidency, you know, a bunch of different things. It's clear we have a lot of polarization in this country. And, you know, that's pretty hard. I mean, I know that's really hard for a lot of people, just that understanding that there's a lot of people who feel very strongly and very differently than each of us do in various ways. So we don't yet understand who voted for what and why, what motivated people to do this, and what are the implications. I mean, people are still crunching the numbers and sorting the data and trying to figure out why did this happen and how did that happen and why were the polls off and why were the polls right here and what does this all mean? And so that's just another level of uncertainty and another level of angst that people are feeling. And then, you know, as always, like some people are really happy with the results of the election. Some were hoping for something different, whether that's you were looking for, you know, a stronger blue wave or you were hoping for something different with the Republicans. I mean, there's a lot of different feelings about the results. And I'm sure a lot of us are just feeling exhaustion. You know, it's been the election season is exhausting for a lot of people. It's hard, it's tense. A lot of people were working on elections in one way or the other. So I'm sure a lot of us are just feeling that feeling right now. So let's jump into the presidential results. I'm sure you all are seeing the news too, but just a quick summary. Currently, most outlets have called 253 electoral votes for Joe Biden. You need 270 to win. There are still votes being counted in six states. That includes Alaska, Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Georgia. Biden is projected to win the presidency, but it is not 100% certain yet. He's ahead in some of those states, Nevada and Arizona, and he is gaining ground as they count some of the final votes in Pennsylvania and Georgia. Many are saying he'll end up ahead once all votes are counted there. So we don't know the final results yet. That's where things are headed. And so we're going to make some assumptions around that for this presentation. And we'll know more, could be later today, could be tomorrow. We want to make sure we, like everyone else, wants every vote to be counted to make sure that we can see what the, you know, final results are. Now let's move on to what's going on in Congress. So in the Senate, Republicans are projected to win at least 50 seats and Democrats 48. Both the Senate races in Georgia are projected to go to a runoff election on January 5th. So any of the candidates in any race where you don't get 50% of the votes in Georgia, then it goes to a runoff. So the most likely result is that Republicans will retain control of the Senate, but it is possible that there'll be a 50-50 split with the vice president as the tiebreaker. So that is still up in the air, but it is definitely very tight in the Senate. Even in the best of circumstances, it would be a tie in terms of best of circumstances for the Democrats. That would be a tie 50-50 there. In the House of Representatives, a lot of races are still uncalled, but Democrats are expected to retain control. Republicans have flipped a handful of seats. Some outlets are saying Democrats are likely to have 226 seats, where 218 is enough for control. That's going to be a much slimmer margin than we've had in, you know, this recent Congress. And that's going to mean just in general, things are tighter. It's going to be harder for the, you know, Democrats to keep their coalition together to pass things. There won't be, you know, won't be the same margin of error for the Democrats there. And then just in general, there's still, you know, elections force each party to really contemplate, you know, what does this mean? And what, you know, what won, what didn't win, what really resonated with our voters? You know, for the Republican Party, there's a lot that's unclear. What happens in a post-Trump world? Who are the party standard bearers? You know, will they start keep running Trump-style candidates, you know, that a more populist mold? You know, will there, you know, where does that leave Reagan-style conservatism? You know, how will they build their coalition and put those pieces together? When there's also soul searching for the Democratic Party as well. You know, how far left will they govern? How can they appeal to rural voters? You know, where does economic populism fit into the Democratic agenda? You know, the focus on race and addressing racism in our country. These are all, you know, big questions for our country, big questions for our political parties, and something that's still going to be developed, you know, as the narrative is, you know, as people do the analysis, as the narrative shifts, as our leaders, you know, take charge, and as the public pushes them on different things. I mean, as we've seen in the last 4 years, the public can drive the narrative, and we're likely to see that a lot in the next 2 to 4 years. So that's where CCL fits in. What is CCL's strategy moving forward? Well, first, I want to say that, you know, whatever strategy we have, it's going to be grounded in our values. And one of our values is being nonpartisan. You know, we are open to all who are serious about solving climate change. That's both in terms of, you know, volunteers who are open to solving climate change and working with every elected official who's open to solving climate change, regardless of their party affiliation or their political ideology. And so CCL is going to continue to focus on having a big tent and broadening our support across the political spectrum. You know, we see that there's room for people, you know, anywhere on that political spectrum to be a part of this movement, be part of our chapters. We want to make them feel welcome and belonging. We want to make sure that they can feel active and engaged in working with their elected officials to push them on climate. And we're a place where people with diverse views can work together for a common cause. And we're one of the few places for that. And so it's a really important thing that we're doing, both just from that place alone, but also because we think it's one of the most effective ways to drive change in our politics. And we'll continue to focus on diversity recruitment, and that includes both demographic diversity as well as political ideology and diversity around that. Okay, so what things are we going to be expecting here? So, you know, as we know, who's president matters a lot. Biden as president can do a lot to help on climate just because the executive branch has a lot of authority there. He can rejoin the Paris Agreement. The EPA can, you know, do things via regulations, whether that's around vehicle mileage standards and methane rules and other, you know, pollutions and, you know, et cetera. Public lands regulations, you know, there's been, you know, Biden campaigned on the notion that he would, you know, end certain kinds of extraction on public land. And so, like, that's something that the executive branch can do without congressional action. The EPA, you know, had the Clean Power Plan, and now it's got the ACE plan. There's probably going to be changes to that, but it will be a slow process. It will likely face court challenges. And so we know in CCL that executive action is great, it's needed, but it's not going to be enough. We need to have legislation. So without the support of Congress, you know, a Biden presidency can only go so far in terms of addressing climate change. And so a lot of our focus is going to be on the Senate. You know, we can see that the Senate is the, you know, the tough place for us to get things moving. You know, with such tight control, we're going to need bipartisan support. We know that the House will move when the Senate shows that it is ready. You know, again, we've talked about this before in various CCL strategy things. You know, Nancy Pelosi is not going to have her House members take tough votes until she thinks that the Senate is ready to actually move on climate. And so we're looking for the senators to really bring forward climate legislation. Some of the good news is that some of the moderate Republicans kept their seats. So we have, you know, moderates like Collins, probably Tillis in North Carolina. And so they have shown openness to engaging on climate change. And so that's exciting. Obviously, with other moderates like, you know, Republican moderates like Murkowski, you know, Romney, et cetera. And one thing that we can note, you know, one of the things we're trying to do is make sure the Republicans know that they can win with a climate agenda. And so, you know, people like senators like Susan Collins in Maine and Tom Tillis in North Carolina, they were in line with what their constituents want on climate, and they won. Whereas the Republican senators in Colorado and Arizona were out of line with what their constituents wanted, and they lost. And so that's something that we can make sure that senators know that that's, you know, that being good on climate can translate into electoral victories. So with that focus on Senate, if the Republicans maintain control, we need to make it, you know, a winning strategy for Republicans to take action on climate. They're going to be looking towards some of the swing races for 2022. Here are some states that are going to be influential: Alaska, Arizona, Florida, Iowa, North Carolina, New Hampshire, Nevada, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. Those races, they're going to be Senate races in 2022 in all of those states. All of them are states where, you know, the outcome, you know, could swing one way or the other. And so those are places where not only will the senators in those states really be paying attention to what the electorate wants, but Mitch McConnell and other leadership will also be paying attention to that, because what they, you know, they want to make sure they can, if, you know, in this scenario, that they can maintain their majority. If the Democrats control the Senate, then they'll have no votes to spare. You know, Republican support will be key if they want to pass anything. You know, it's more, there was a lot of talk of removing the filibuster. I think that that's less likely in such a tightly split Congress. It's still possible, but it's less likely than in a Congress that had a stronger Democratic control. 50-50 is a very tight, tight place to be making decisions from. So we are very hopeful that we can get a bipartisan fee and dividend bill introduced in the Senate, and we must continue to work very hard to make that happen. We know that that's not going to happen easily, that it's going to, you know, take a lot of work, but we also know that, you know, 2 years ago we had action in the lame duck session, both in the House. That's when our bill, the HR, wasn't 763 at the time, but the Energy Innovation Act was introduced into the House, and then there was also an introduction into the Senate in the lame duck period 2 years ago. So there's a lot of work to do this year. There's a lot of progress that can be made during the lame duck session that can put us in a good place as we go into 2021. And we've got a conference, December 5th, sign up for it. There's going to be lobby days afterwards. That's our chance to go into the new Congress, or what's, you know, the returning Congress, and make sure that we can get them to take action on climate and be the first in there talking with them about climate change. So what's going on in the House? We will continue to push for more co-sponsors on the Energy Innovation Act in the House. We want to go into 2021 with as many co-sponsors as possible from both parties. We want to, you know, we can't take for granted at all what the sponsors that we have. We can't assume that our current sponsors are solid. We need to work now to appreciate them, confirm their support, move them towards greater engagement, get them to recruit others. You know, don't assume with, you know, the election makes a difference, and it's going to influence what legislators are thinking and feeling. And so don't assume that just because you've had a no in the past that you won't get a yes now. So you've been working with your legislators, you know what's important to them, you know where they are on carbon pricing, on the Energy Innovation Act, but don't assume that what they've said in the past still holds. Maybe they're in a different place now. And so Democrats may be more open to this type of bill. Republicans may have a different position with Trump out of office. You know, there's a lot of shifting, things shift when there's election, you know, when elections happen. So, you know, this is going to be a great opportunity in December and beyond to, you know, work with some of those representatives who might be ready to sign on to our, to the Energy Innovation Act. And then general strategy, you know, we've been focusing for the last few months on really building business support for climate action and for carbon pricing. We have been doing that because we think it's one of the most important things to do regardless of the outcome of the election. And here we are in one of the possible scenarios, and it is still important. We still think that businesses want climate solutions, and we can help them see that their support is crucial to driving that action. We know that they, you know, have not been lobbying Congress as much as we think they need to be doing. And so this is a lever that we can pull in terms of, you know, building more support for our elected officials to take action in Congress, because if they're hearing from businesses that, you know, the time is now, we want action, we want solutions, you know, then that's going to drive them to take action and recognize that that's what their constituents want to see. So that's the quick run through.
You're getting a lot of love, Tony. Thank you so much for giving your time tonight, and all of you for sticking on. We're here. As a reminder, you can find out more information if you go to our forums. That's simply just ccclusa.org/forums. Tony's email's tony@citizensclimate.org. Mine's brett@citizensclimate.org. If you have anything, we'd love to help out. But for tonight, given that we are at the top of the hour, I'm going to unmute all lines, and we'll wish you all well as we await the final results. Thank you, everyone. Much
Bye.
Love to all of
you. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Brett, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram @CitizensClimate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.